I'm good enough. I'm smart enough.
It's smelling salts. Okay, here we go. So the IIHF World Championships have wrapped up, which I know is obviously the biggest news that you all have been paying attention to in the hockey world. But one thing that we wanted to touch on was the very fun to watch British team, which avoided relegation by beating France in their final game, meaning they get to stay in the tournament for next time around. They celebrated with the following. Now, I just want to give you a little heads up. Normally, we would bleep out any kind of significant cursing with our, you know, our patented bleep horn. But for this one, for the effect, you really kind of need to hear what they're saying. So we're not going to bleep this one out. So if you have small kids with you, you know, earmuffs. Okay, earmuffs. Here we go.
Earmuffs.
So there you go. That's a real happy team right there.
I love it.
Singing
self-deprecation.
We are shit and we know it is what they're singing there. And they're dancing around on the ice and celebrating that they managed to beat France.
And
so
it's possible that I bought a t-shirt that says that.
Oh, wow.
From them.
Well, make sure to not have any young eyes about when Andy's in the vicinity because he might have a shirt with a curse word on it.
Yep.
We should talk a little bit about this, though. And obviously, there's tons to talk about in the hockey world right now. But Finland ends up winning over Canada. The Finns have become this like hockey power all of a sudden. It's such a small country, but they keep winning all these international tournaments. Obviously, in this case, they didn't have that many NHL players participating.
They had no regular NHL players.
They beat Canada in the championship, and then their fans went out and swam in fountains to celebrate at midnight. There was a pretty funny video of a couple of like Finnish people in a fountain in Helsinki, and they actually brought their own raft, and they were just like floating around in the fountain in the middle of the night. So
I kind of like this trend because last year we saw Ovechkin celebrating in a fountain
after the Stanley Cup
victory. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is the thing now. If your team wins a big tournament, you celebrate in a fountain.
So Canada on their roster had 212 goals scored in the NHL this year.
Mm-hmm.
Finland had zero.
Yep. And none of the Canadians swam in the fountain that we know of.
That's true. So they might have.
Yeah, I swam in a fountain once in college, and a lot of people just like shook their heads at me, like, "What are you doing?"
Was it during the day?
No, it was at night. There's some pops involved.
Me and some friends tried to dye the fountain in Western Red Square red.
Uh-huh. How'd that go?
Did not work.
Okay. Live and learn. And we're off the rails. Okay.
You guys done talking about fountains?
Yes.
I'd like to actually talk about the game because it was actually a pretty entertaining game. Finland basically held on at the end. They won 3-1, but they had no business even being that close. Canada outshot them 44-22. In the third period, Canada had 21 shots to Finland's 3, and Finland got a goal in that third period. The goalie for Finland stood on his head. And Darren, you'll love to know he's a prospect for Chicago.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
So what's interesting about him, he's 24. He played pretty well, but he played in Rockford, which is Chicago's AHL team.
The Ice Hogs.
Yeah. But he is technically expansion draft eligible.
Oh.
So anyway, something to keep an eye on. And then I don't know if you saw the third place game, but Russia beat Czech.
I believe in that Canada game, Seattle's own Shea Theodore, Seattle Thunderbirds' own Shea Theodore scored a pretty nice goal for Canada.
It was the player of the game for them.
Yep. Yeah, and on the topic of Russia winning bronze medal, Don Cherry was apparently heard today saying he was surprised that they only got third place, being that they have so many Europeans on their team.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Well, I was surprised that Canada, you know, lost with so many North Americans on the team.
It's crazy, right? Sound of Hockey episode 38. We are calling this one the Pavel Dimitra episode, who obviously he was a great player to wear number 38. Played for the Blues, played for the Wild, played for the Canucks, right?
Did he play for my Vancouver Canucks?
Played for my Minnesota Wild, played for the current Western Conference champion Blues. He was part of that Yaroslavl team that went down in the plane crash in the KHL. So
yeah.
RIP Pavel, but great player nonetheless, number 38. So thought we'd throw him on the show notes for today. We wanted to start out with a review, and it's really robust and hard hitting. It comes from,
in depth.
Yeah, it comes from Low Effort Nickname, and it says they asked nicely, smiley face. Goalie Gear Corner, you don't see that every day, weekly one-timers. So
it was 5 stars,
uh-huh.
And I think he lives up to his username.
He or she.
He
but
or she.
He or she doesn't really specify whether or not he or she actually likes any of these things. But they do exist in the show, and we did get 5 stars.
And we may get those in the Today Show.
You may. leave your 5-star review on iTunes. We will read it on the next pod, obviously, and we'll give you a nice little shout-out. So thank you to Low Effort Nickname for that,
that
strong and robust review. That really, I mean, it pretty much encapsulates the show in a nutshell. So.
I'd say there's medium effort in our show.
Medium, yeah.
We prep.
We work on this pretty hard.
For 10 minutes.
Yeah, it may not show, but we work on this pretty hard. So my name is Darren Brown, a.k.a. at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by Andy Ide. Hello, Andy.
Good. How's it going? I'm at Andy Ide on Twitter.
And also John Barr. Hello.
Hello.
We're coming to you. Oh,
where are you going on Twitter?
NHL2 Seattle.
Yes.
And what's our?
Sound underscore hockey.
That's right.
Well, we don't know if John runs that. Somebody runs.
One of our staff.
Our producer. Our producer does.
Exactly. One of our many, many minions that we have working for us.
We have a social media person.
Yeah. We are coming to you from Bar Down Studios in Seattle, somewhere in Seattle. Lots to talk about this week. And it's a huge episode because we had an incredibly special guest on, Mr. Grant Fuhr. Ever heard of him? You should have, because we named one of our episodes after him. So
top 100 NHL player of all time.
Yep. Vezina winner, 4-time Stanley Cup winner. Super fun to talk to him. There's also a brand new movie out about him, a documentary, which is coming to Seattle International Film Festival, isn't it, John?
It is. Showtimes and locations are on SIFT.net and just search for Coco, Grant Fuhr.
Making Coco.
Making Coco or just Grant Fuhr.
You can also just keep listening as well.
Yeah, we'll get into it a little bit later.
If you listen until the end of the episode.
You will know the times.
Yes.
So showings are on this weekend, June 1st and 2nd, and then the following weekend, June 9th. Go check them out. Go to SIFT.net to figure out how to get tickets and everything. I'm hoping we sell out a couple of those. We did last year, so let's do it again.
Yep. Are we going to be doing another NHL watch party, too, in the next couple of weeks?
Yes, we are. On Saturday, June 1st at Petoskey's for Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final.
Very fun.
First game in St. Louis.
Uh-huh. First game in St. Louis. We'll probably hear Gloria an obnoxious amount of time.
Well, if things go well. Yeah, absolutely.
I think we will either way.
Okay. Fair enough.
Get the mac and cheese pizza,
Tater tot hot dish, yep. Other things that we want to talk about here in Seattle, we had some interesting news about friend of the podcast's first ever guest mind you, Mr. Dave Tippett. Mm. So what's the latest there, John, as of our recording here on Monday night?
As of our recording Monday night, he will be named the new head coach of the Edmonton Oilers.
Is the report. This hasn't officially been announced, but it sounds like it's going to be announced.
Rumored for like literally the last 10 days, but it seems like tomorrow, which is Tuesday, they will announce him as the head coach.
From what I've read from some of the folks that are on the inside of these things is that the NHL does not want teams not in the cup to make announcements on game days.
Makes sense.
So it sounds like the deal's already been agreed to. They're just going to have the press conference on Tuesday.
There you go. The other kind of news, what do we call it? Yeah, it was kind of news, right? There's a city council meeting on Monday that involved the NHL team. So what's the latest here, Andy? Construction on the practice facility. I hear it's moving along, yes?
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of breaking news at that meeting. Todd Lewicki was there. He made a presentation to the council. Jerry Bruckheimer, one of the owners, was there as well. And the main thing that came out of it is that construction on the practice facility at Northgate is set to begin January 1st as their target.
And Jerry Bruckheimer, he was there to make another episode of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah,
or?
He talked a little bit in the presentation. Very cool. It was basically an update on the arena's progress and what they've been doing, and some of the same stuff we saw or heard during the tour.
The practice facility was the only kind of new thing.
Yeah.
And it's going to take about 15 months to complete, which is right in time.
And if you've been to Northgate, the JCPenney's already closed. That was there. And the Macy's has a huge sign saying everything's on sale. So they're obviously on their way out as well. So things are already starting to move at Northgate Mall.
Let's talk some actual hockey. And yes, we will get to the NHL and what's happening there. Don't worry. But before we do, we have a couple of, do we call them cup dates?
Segment. I think we got to put a cap on how many segments we have.
A lot of segments. Okay. Memorial Cup update from Andy. Your Memorial Cup date, please.
we had an all-Q final in the Memorial Cup between Halifax, the host team.
Which was a rematch
of the final.
What does all-Q mean? That's just Joel Quenneville just skating around?
The QMJHL.
Okay.
The Quebec Major Junior Hockey League.
Got it.
The two teams that met in the final also met in the final of the Memorial Cup. Halifax was the host team. They played the Noren.
Not going to skate here anymore.
Yeah,
that's for
the
sure.
Huskies, but well, they won.
They're not going to skate here anymore because the season is now over because yes. they won the Memorial Cup.
So yeah. good season for them. They win the Memorial Cup and the OHL Championship in the same year. That's pretty cool for them. Earlier in the week, the Prince Albert Raiders, the WHL champion, they extended the WHL champion losing streak. They lost. Mm-hmm. They went 0-3. 13 straight losses now for the WHL champions in the Memorial Cup. So I there's a lot of speculation about what this means. Mm-hmm. I think it's just cyclical. The WHL does have a pretty good overall record in that tournament. Just the last 3 years have not gone well.
Okay, and another cup date, the Calder Cup.
The Calder
also
Cup.
Going on in the AHL. What's
yeah,
the
and
latest
as
there?
Of just earlier today, as we're recording this, the Chicago Wolves, thanks to a big goal from former Thunderbird Keegan Kolesar.
There you go.
Former Winter Hawk Cody Glass also had a good playoff run for them, but they beat the San Diego Gulls, which is Anaheim's affiliate, and they're now into the Calder Cup final. They're going to play the Charlotte Checkers, the Baby Jerks, which is Carolina's, obviously, Carolina's affiliate. So that's going to get going here this week, the good old Calder Cup finals.
I saw there's a little bit of controversy on that game, too, because they were playing the Toronto Marlies.
Double overtime.
And the puck went behind the net in Charlotte's zone. It hit off the netting, yep. came back in, and the refs didn't notice it. But then, I don't know. There's
a lot of time went on. It wasn't like they scored right away.
A lot of play happens. The puck goes the other way. It gets turned over. They come back.
And then Morgan Geeky, former Tri-City American, who played there last year, scored the game winner.
Okay, all right. I was just thinking about this. You know how I get in trouble for talking too much Minnesota Wild, and we call it hashtag minutia? We need to workshop something when Andy brings it back to
I'm
WHL,
tying it into to Northwest, Washington
okay.
State.
Okay. All right.
These are all guys who played in the U.S. Division.
I get that. It all comes back to the dub for,
that's right.
for Andy.
I spent a lot of time in the dub.
That's like playing?
No.
Oh.
Well, okay.
Sitting in the press box watching a lot of games.
Yes.
Well, I just think he those were valid, but Andy can kind of find these loose connections uh-huh. to the WHL.
I'm
and that's
I'm
where
I'm
we need
context.
Yeah,
that's
but
that's
sometimes right. it's a stretch. I think these were good.
These are good ones. Yeah.
These were good, but we're gonna like slap you on the wrist or something.
I didn't mention the Victoria Cougars with the Grant Fuhr interview at all.
Good point. He did
just
play
did.
For,
he just did. He just did.
Or the time that you actually
I rode an elevator with him in Victoria. Yeah.
Which we really missed an opportunity there.
I didn't say anything to him. I was kind of afraid.
Yeah. But I was thinking, you know, you could have been like, "Hey, Grant, remember that time when you got in an elevator?"
It would have been a long. There would have been a lot of silence after that.
Uh-huh. And then you could have been like, "Wasn't that like super awesome?"
I think he
remember
would have
that.
With it. He would have rolled with it.
All right, so that's our cup date. We'll workshop the you know everything coming back to WHL for Andy. But if you have any ideas on that, put it in your 5-star review on iTunes. Hey, John, women's professional hockey. What's going on here?
Well, there's a couple updates. A union was formed by the women that are boycotting the NWHL or looking mm-hmm. for the game, which is good. It helps them negotiate with any potential people that are putting a league together. But everybody speculates that it's the NHL. Either way, it's moving. Meanwhile, the NWHL is actually signing players because they're open in free agent season now. So just about every team signed a couple players so far. The only team I think that hasn't is the Buffalo Buttes. Speaking of the Buffalo Buttes, is the Sabres. I think we might have reported on this, but it's kind of old news. Sabres ended the relationship with the Buttes for next season. Mm-hmm. So basically
they just severed their financial.
Severed their, yeah, their commitment. Same thing with the Metropolitan Riveters, yeah. which is with the Devils. The Devils were kind of that parent organization.
Yeah, and they were playing in their practice facility sometimes. And
I know the Boston Pride have a relationship with the Bruins, and similar, they play in the practice facility. I don't know the context of that relationship, but they haven't announced anything specific, but they are playing in the Stanley Cup final, and that mm-hmm. might be – they don't want to do anything that might be perceived as negative right now until after the season or might even evaluate it after the season. So.
Sure. Okay. So what does the union mean for the future here? I mean, it's essentially they've indicated now that they're not going to play for the NWHL ever again if it's.
I mean, they've kind of implied that. They haven't been so explicit about that. But for one, you didn't really know who was driving the bus or who was weighing in and who's deciding these mm-hmm. things. It wasn't like 199 people coming together and saying we should all do this sure. at the same time. Obviously, so they basically formed a board that where they're going to be like almost like a steering committee, and so that they can help go through the next year or so as they're trying to figure out what the right solution is, quote unquote, for the game or sure. the hashtag for the game. You know, it isn't really that big a news, but it's movement. And I don't always want to wait to some big seismic change to report on it. So I'm just kind of sharing that.
All right. Well, interesting stuff. And we'll continue to monitor. Thank you, John, for that update. John, some some less.
It's the sad moment of the podcast.
Yeah, we're gonna take it down a notch here. John, how are you feeling? How you doing, bud? How you feeling there, champ?
Hunky Dory.
Uh huh.
How are you?
I mean, I'm good. I'm good. Anything happen here in the last week that you want to kind of talk about or just
vent about,
discuss?
Oh, Dylan Gambrell scored his first goal in the NHL.
Yeah.
Wasn't that awesome?
That was a pretty nice shot.
Yeah. Isn't that awesome?
It was pretty awesome. I think he's from Bonnie Lake, if I'm not mistaken.
I've heard, I think so. We haven't confirmed.
Yes.
That. Yeah. Now, in that game, how did the score turn out?
Not well.
Okay.
Like the series, not okay. Well.
All right. First off, I'm sorry about your loss. I do want to kind of break it down a little bit, though. I do have a little bit of a Sharks postmortem, if you will. Now, there's things to think about here. First of all, what do you think led to them losing? Do you think that it should have come out another way, or do you think that the better team won, or what were your kind of overall thoughts on the series?
I think the better team won. I mean, there were some injuries certainly at the end, but I think the Sharks looked good in game one, probably looked pretty decent in game four. Like, I think that's the one that got away from them.
Mm-hmm.
If they would have kind of pulled that off, obviously it changes the series quite a bit. But I really do think St. Louis is a pretty powerful team. Like, their defense is so strong and so big, and that's what they just couldn't really muster much past them.
It felt like they wore down the Sharks as that went along.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly the injuries, the last game, the only reason Gambrell was in the game is because Carlson was hurt, Thomas Hertl was hurt, and those are three of your best five guys. Regular season and postseason.
That's tough sledding for anybody.
Yeah. So, I mean, but it, you know, at the same time, like, even with those guys, St. Louis has been playing pretty well. The big thing, though, on the Sharks now, you know, kind of their postmortem is like, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
Pavelski's a free agent. Carlson's a free agent. And Jumbo Joe Thornton.
And so is Nyquist free agent as well.
Nyquist. Yeah. I mean,
he's a depth player.
Yeah. So is Donskoy. But all signals are that Carlson's headed out. And I don't think the Sharks can really afford him based on what if the market value is.
As a Sharks fan, if you had to choose, because it may be down to just between, like, if it's between Pavelski and Carlson, you can sign one of them. You got to be picking Pavelski, don't you? For what he's done there?
No, but it also depends on the term.
Yeah.
So Pavelski is obviously the Shark. He was the captain.
Yeah.
But Carlson's probably, he's 6 years younger. So
Carlson's going to be a big free agent guy this year. It's going to be interesting to watch where he goes. I've heard some speculation that Tampa might want to make room for him. That seems far-fetched with their salary cap
strapped
situation.
Maybe Florida could see him playing for
Quinville. I've heard New York. You know, he and Henrik Lundqvist are good buddies. I've heard that might be a team. I know there was interest in Vancouver last year about trading for him. I don't know if he would want to go there, but I think they could at least make a phone call to him. Wouldn't be surprising.
I'm fairly sure we're in the very speculative stage here.
Yeah, of course. This is what you read out there.
So I know.
But so he did tweet a few days ago, thank you to the entire at San Jose Sharks organization, fans, and especially teammates. It was a great run that ended too early, but lots of great memories were created. Well, he says were created. We know what he means.
The entire
Bay Area has been nothing but classy and respectful to me and my family. Now, that
sounds like a goodbye.
Really sound like he's planning to come back. Maybe we're reading into it a little bit too much.
But, you know, maybe they tried to get a deal done during the season.
Mm-hmm. The reports are that they were talking to him.
I'm saying he knows they're done talking.
Oh, yeah. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right? You think he's gone?
I think so.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, he's such a good player, but it seems like reading some things from San Jose that there maybe were some mixed reviews as to how good he was for San Jose this year. What was your thoughts about?
Well, he had a lot of injuries.
He's hurt since the All-Star game.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he ever played. He had a tough time adjusting when he got there, and then he started humming, right? And if you probably look at his points total, it's like a bell curve right in the middle, right December and January, where he got probably 80% of his points. I don't know that, but you probably do that. And
sounds right. Just
because I remember he started cold and then he got hurt and they shut him down for quite a bit after he got hurt again. He re-injured it and then the playoffs, there were moments where he looked great and then other times where he looked. And if you've had a groin injury before, it's not something that you can kind of play through. It's not like a sprained wrist, which is tough for a hockey player. But groin, like if you don't take time off, it's not getting better. And probably getting worse.
Yeah, well, the injury was – I mean, I remember in game five he tried to play with an injury, and I don't think he finished that game.
He played 7 minutes, and he usually plays 25.
And he had a pretty bad turnover in one of the goals. It was kind of a rough game for him. Mm.
I'm told the groin is a long way from the heart, though. Can you confirm?
I don't know. I don't know what a long way means.
All right. Well, I am truly sorry. I know that we had an ongoing thing where – you thought that we were not being sensitive enough and all that, but
it's only when we were watching together.
Yeah, but I know from being a fan for a long time, it totally sucks when you get close to, you know, to a Stanley Cup final like that and have your team fall.
I've been here before, just FYI.
Yeah, I know.
A couple times.
But being genuine, I'm sorry that your team fell like that.
I appreciate the sympathy, but it's not no big deal at all.
But the Sharks are a team that are going to be interesting to watch because they have been –
I'll remember this.
They've been such a consistently good organization for so long. And this is going to be an interesting offseason for them because they have some big decisions.
So as much as you say that, like I've been hearing that for about 8 years.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Oh, they got to tear it down, rebuild.
I'm not saying they tear it down. I'm just saying they're interesting as far as what they're going
to
do.
But essentially it's the same thing, right? Like you have decisions to make.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I've been hearing that for 8 years and they've still kind of
they've got a great GM there.
Yeah. And they continue to make the playoffs. And, you know, Ryan Merkley's coming up. He's going to be pretty good. I think he's played in the OHL this year. You don't know?
Sure.
Oh, I thought you knew all junior.
Oh, yikes.
There's some guys coming up. But, you know, they have to hit. Mm-hmm. They don't have as much. You know,
they still have Meyer and Hurdle. Those guys are still young.
Yeah.
And totally Dylan Gambrell.
Kocur's relatively young, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not on the old side. The other guys, you're right.
I'm not saying that they're going to fall off. I just think they're going to be they're always an intriguing team in the offseason because they play to win, right? I mean, like our Carlson trade was interesting. That was a move to win. And they've never shied away from going after what they think can help them win. So they're always a player and they're always a team to watch.
All right. I can't talk about the Sharks anymore. Let's talk about teams that are still alive. The Blues and the Bruins, who are now in the Stanley Cup final. Like I said, we're recording on Monday, Memorial Day, and we just finished watching Game 1. So Bruins come away with a 4-2 victory. They fall behind early, 2-0 to the Blues. Then they come back and score 4 unanswered. Did you guys have any thoughts on this? It did seem like the Bruins kind of got their sea legs under them a little bit partway through the game and then just completely took over.
Well, one of the narratives was this 11-day layoff they had, and that might have been part of what the first period was about. But after that, once they got going, they really kind of dominated the last two periods of that game and I think heavily outshot St. Louis and had the better chances. So, but St. Louis was still in it. It was a one-goal game until late.
Yeah, and I mean, it was an empty netter at the end, so 4-2, even that, like it was actually closer than that. But a lot of that was Binnington. He did have a couple of plays that were like not quite as dominant as we've seen him. I think this maybe is the second goal that just kind of went under his glove. And then on the winning goal, too, he actually had it in his glove, dropped it, and then the puck went across and got banged in.
And it was a physical game, too. There was a lot of hitting in this game. This is what we thought it was going to be. These are two teams that don't shy away from that.
And, you know, it didn't look good for St. Louis, right, once Boston kind of started getting their legs under them. But Sharks dominated
the
first game against St. Louis, so I don't think it means much. Yeah.
One thing we do know is not going to happen is the whole sweep train that has been happening in the Eastern Conference.
That's
Boston
true.
Boston now has won a game.
Yep, the theory is over. I still have hope alive in the bracket that the one thing that I picked to happen will actually happen, whereas the seven other things I picked to happen were incorrect. So
speaking of those brackets, I saw a tweet today because Gary Bettman, which we'll talk more about later, gave his – he always does a press conference before the finals, but there was like something like 1.7 million NHL brackets turned in on their site. Three people had the first round correct.
Wow.
Only just three out of 1.7 million.
That's pretty
wild. Astonishing.
It speaks to the parity in the NHL and just how anything can happen in the playoffs.
I'm not one of the three, by the way.
Yeah, I bet. Did you guys happen to catch, by the way, John, I know you did, but during the introductions, they were, you know, about to say, oh, here's Craig Berube. But before they said, here's Craig Berube, they said, interim head coach of the Blues, Craig Berube. I thought that was – and that's like over the, you know,
that's
the PA
system.
Total gamesmanship. I thought that was a pretty funny little joke.
Yeah, I thought that was on purpose. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was on the NBC feed, but on the CBC feed.
I love it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's just a total Boston thing too, right? Like you know that
– They're not wrong. He is the interim head coach.
But the PA announcer has – you know, he's like, how many ways can I – do little jabs here.
Well, that probably came from somebody
totally
else.
Unbiased. Yeah.
I'm sure that came from above.
You're right. But anyway, funny little thing that I just noticed that they threw in that he's not even a full-time head coach as of right now. So I'm guessing they might extend
his
contract. We'll see. Hey, you know who else played for the Blues? Grant Fear. You want to talk to him? Okay, yeah. Cool. Well, we did. So here's our interview with the legendary netminder, Grant Fuhr. We now welcome on to Sound of Hockey a really, really special guest. We have a four-time Stanley Cup winning Hall of Fame netminder. His hockey career spanned 19 seasons in the NHL. Vezina Trophy winner, named one of the top 100 NHL players of all time. Also, he's the subject of the new documentary called Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr Story, which will be playing at Seattle International Film Festival this coming weekend. So make sure you get out and see it. But welcome to Sound of Hockey, Grant Fuhr.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on for sure. So first and foremost, really important question here. How are you swinging the golf clubs these days?
Oh, I have good days, bad days. But for the most part, I enjoy every day.
Well, there's nothing better than being out on the links on a nice day for sure. The topic of hockey, though, how much are you paying attention to what's going on in today's NHL? Any thoughts on game one of your former team?
I actually quite enjoyed game one. I mean, I think it took Boston probably the first 10 minutes of the game to find their legs. But once they found their legs, St. Louis knows they're in for a fight. And I think Boston kind of took the last 2.5 periods to them. And I think St. Louis's forwards got a little bit high. But other than that, I mean, it was a good hockey game. It was a good, great game for game one.
Yeah. Do you find yourself, being that you played for the Blues for a few seasons, do you find yourself having any rooting interests, or are you pretty neutral at this point?
No, I'm still cheering for the Blues.
Yeah.
I've got lots of friends that work in Boston's organization, too, but I'm still a Blues fan.
Yeah.
So let's jump into the film. We got an advanced preview of it, and it was pretty awesome. I can't wait to see every hockey fan in Seattle experience it. But the film talks about your rookie year where you went straight from being drafted out of junior to the NHL. That doesn't really happen anymore these days, because you see even Jordan Binnington, he's at 25 and he makes his rookie career. Was that pretty common back then when you played?
Well, it wasn't that it was real common. It was just I happened to hit the right spot, right time, and got lucky with it. More than anything, I mean, that just happened that Edmonton had great goalies already, and I got a lucky break, and things went pretty well, and I ended up staying there.
And what do you think the key to that success was at the young age?
I just enjoyed the game. I think probably that's the biggest thing is I just played. I mean, I didn't expect to be there my first year. Most guys get sent down, so there wasn't really any pressure, and the Oilers just allowed me to go out and play.
Nice.
And so not everybody gets a movie made about themselves. What was the motivation to make this movie, and how did it all come together?
Well, I had some friends in the organization that had talked about wanting to do it. Donnie Metz, our producer, and I'd met Adam along the way, and Donnie had been bugging me for a couple of years to do it, and finally decided that, it can't be that bad. Might as well see what it looks like, and it turned out pretty good.
Was that your idea, or did somebody come to you and present it to you?
No, it was Donnie's idea. And I had the easy part. I just got to live the life.
So a lot of the film obviously deals with your time in Edmonton with the Oilers. Wayne Gretzky's a big part of that. He gives you some high praise in that film. He calls you the greatest goalie ever. What impact did Wayne have on your career?
Well, I think Wayne made me feel comfortable right away. And he's probably the first person I met in the organization when I got drafted. And Wayne was like that with all the young guys. He made everybody feel comfortable. And once you get to the dressing room, it was just a fabulous group of guys. And they made you feel welcome and made you fit in right away.
And later on in your career, you played against him, I'm guessing, right? Did he ever score on you?
Yeah, unfortunately, he did get a couple.
I don't think you're the only one, Grant.
Yeah.
No, I think I might be in a long list.
So speaking of Gretzky, he was also instrumental in you joining the Blues. And so we talked a little bit about the Blues in game one, but what was your reaction like when they clinched and won the conference final?
I think it's awesome. I mean, the city of St. Louis is a phenomenal hockey city, and their fans have been diehard for going on almost 50 years now. So I think the fact that they finally get rewarded with the Stanley Cup final, it's been, what, since 68-ish, somewhere in there?
Yeah, 70.
Since they've been in a final. So I think it's a great reward for the fans for supporting the team that long.
Going back to the Oilers, I'm a child of the 80s, so I watched a lot of those Oilers games. Such good teams that you had there. You had a lot of good players. What was the confidence like for you guys? I would imagine that every time you went out on the ice, you thought you were gonna win or felt you could win.
Well, we played a little different style than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at that time, teams were still playing defensive hockey and stuff, and we kind of opened it up a little bit. We thought we'd trade chances with everybody. We had enough offensive talent that we figured we could outscore most teams. So it was a fun way to play. And yeah, you're going to give up some goals against, but at the same time, you're going to win a lot of hockey games.
And a memorable moment for me that you actually touch on in the film was the Steve Smith goal in 1986, where he threw it off your back of your leg and in a big moment. I know that you were going through some personal stuff there with your father, but what do you remember about that goal, that experience, and what kind of conversations did you and Smith have about that?
You know, we didn't really talk much about it. Huh. But at the same time, we just won back-to-back cups. Uh-huh. And if anything, it renewed our focus a little bit, where we knew we had to be better so that a lucky bounce can't eliminate you. So I think, if anything, it made us a better hockey team.
What were your days with the cup? I assume they still did that back then, right, where they gave each player the opportunity to take the cup for a day. Do you remember what you did for your celebration days?
We wanted with it as a team. They didn't have anybody to babysat the cup back then. Part of the job creation department.
Yeah.
We wandered everywhere with the cup as a group.
Yeah.
So we created a little bit of mayhem that way.
We mentioned, you know, Gretzky scoring on you at some point in your career. Aside from him, though, is there like a particular guy? Because I mentioned to you before we started recording that I'm a goalie. And there's always that one guy that you know you're going to play him, and you're like, oh, man, this guy's – he just lights me up, and he almost gets in your head. Was there a particular player that you remember facing that you just really hated having to play against him?
Dino Cicerelli was hard to play against because mm-hmm. he was always in your face. Same with Dougie Gilmore. Theo Fleury was a lot of fun to play against. I mean, kind of, those are the kind of guys that you'd make a save, and they'd fall on you. They'd talk to you, so – it was fun to play against him, but at the same time, you knew you were going to have a hard night.
And you mentioned Gilmore and Fleury. I would imagine that back then, those Edmonton-Calgary games were pretty intense. That really, the Battle of Alberta was at its high point, I think, and when you were playing. What were those games like?
They were fun. They weren't the most friendly games, but they were a lot of fun. I mean, if you know a little bit about the rivalry between Edmonton and Calgary, we're only a couple hundred miles apart, so there's a lot of bitterness that kind of goes into that. And the fact that at that time, probably three of the four best teams in the league were ourselves in Edmonton, Calgary, and Winnipeg. We're all in the same division. So it made for some nasty hockey come playoff time.
And you grew up in Spruce Grove, is that right? Is that more Edmonton country or is that more Calgary country?
No, that's Edmonton country.
Okay.
So it's about 11 miles outside Edmonton, but my mom was from Calgary, so I get the best of both worlds.
Nice.
So looking at today's NHL, how do you think you'd do out there today?
I think we'd be okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's become an athletic game again. I think it went for the low last 10 years or so, where it got more to just taking angles away and that sort of thing. But the game's opening up again. It's back to having to be athletic and move. And I think the goalie position, because guys are bigger, the equipment's lighter now, you can wear it a little bit bigger. So I think it makes you a little bit bigger.
Yeah. And I mean, the style of goaltending has changed a lot with, you know, with the equipment that's obviously improved a lot. But you played such an aggressive and almost acrobatic style, and you can kind of see it in the movie. Like, just watching you play out there, it's very different from watching goalies today who are almost robotic. They drop into the butterfly in almost every shot. Did the style of play, like from what you saw during your career, did it change a lot during your career even? And do you think that the guys today are just super boring or what?
I don't know if they're super boring, but I know it doesn't hurt if you get hit in the chest or the arms anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, back then, you weren't really excited about getting hit in the chest or arms. So, and at 5'9", you got to find a way to be a little bit more athletic, and it's the optical illusion of trying to look big.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Some nights I was ultra aggressive. Some nights I stayed a little bit deeper, and you have to give guys different looks just so that they don't get comfortable playing against you.
That's interesting. And yeah, I mean, there are some clips in the movie even where you're out at like the hash marks stopping a slap shot, which you just would not see in today's game.
No, I wasn't the prettiest, but we found a way to get hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that was like the first thing that I was taught as a goalie when I was little was get out and you know, challenge to try to make yourself look bigger. I'm a small guy too. But I mean, nowadays, you watch like a Henrik Lundqvist type of goalie play, he doesn't even leave his goal line, which is, it's kind of crazy to see that guys can be successful with such a different approach to it.
It is, but come playoff time, when you've got more traffic in front of you and more bodies in the crease, you need to be a little bit more aggressive. So if you can get to the top of the crease and plant yourself there, you've got more of a chance when the traffic gets worse. During the regular season, you can get away with being deep, but come playoff time, you've got to be a little bit more aggressive.
Did you find yourself changing your style of play between regular season and playoffs?
No, I try to add something every year. I mean, whether it be a two-pad stack, a poke check. I learned my first year, I just ran off of reflexes.
Yeah.
As I get older, you learn to read the game a little better, so that you can anticipate. By anticipating, you look faster than you really are.
Mm-hmm. What was your favorite kind of save to make? Was it the two-pad stack because it's the coolest looking?
No, I'm always a fan of the glove save.
Okay.
I mean, if I could I was always taught if you can catch the puck, catch the puck.
Yeah.
When you make a great save like that, you know, a player, a skater scores, he can celebrate and do his thing. But as a goalie, you can't really do that, right? You got to have to remain calm. Was there any moment where you were like, man, that was a great save. I want to like jump up and down and celebrate that save.
No, unfortunately, you have to make a lot of them. So. Yeah. Guys that score goals, they get to do it once in a while, so they get to jump around a little bit. But when you're going to make 35 or 40 in a night, then you're a little more reserved.
Our listeners know we do a segment here on this podcast, and I have to do the proper introductions, so bear with me for just a second. It's time for Goalie Gear Corner! with Grant Fuhr, that's a pretty special Goalie Gear Corner. So your career, as we mentioned, it spanned essentially two decades, and the equipment changed so much, and you see it in the movie. When you first play, you're wearing kind of the brown leather pads with like the mask with the eye holes cut out, right? And obviously it changed a ton from when you started to when you finished. Do you remember a particular change or advancement that really stuck out as being something that gave you a lot more confidence as a goalie, or just, I don't know, if you felt like it just helped your game immensely?
Probably the mask was the biggest change.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was the one big thing that you hated getting hit in the head.
Yeah.
More than anything. But when it came down to it, when they put the cage into the mask, it made a huge difference. So you were a little braver coming out.
Did those original masks, I mean, did it really even do much, or did you just, it hit your mask and you just were...
All it did was stop you from getting cut. It's like somebody hit you in the head with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
The only thing that happened was you didn't get cut.
Okay, so here's, with the Goalie Gear Corner, what we usually do is we pretty much just describe cool goalie gear setups. Did you have a particular setup that you remember being one of your favorites from your career?
I think some of the DNR stuff. I mean, once I got convinced to go into some of the different colored pads and stuff, he always tried to make it blend in with the uniform and make it look good. So I think every team I went to, I had a setup that I liked.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was the fun part, is you could adjust the colors and that sort of thing. And the companies were good enough that they would do that for you.
Mm-hmm. What was so your best, what was your best mask?
Cool. Probably the second mask I wore at Edmonton.
Okay.
That's my favorite of the bunch. The first one was pretty cool, but the second one was probably my favorite of the bunch.
And that was the original style, right, with the eye holes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I still like the old school mask.
Awesome.
And you still, in the movie, it shows your family with some of the gear, and you still have a lot of your gear from back in the day. Is that correct?
Oh, I still kept all the masks. The kids get a kick out of them, so they like putting them on and fooling around with them.
That's awesome.
You ever wear them like on the golf course just to like mess with people?
Yeah, I haven't done that yet.
But the word yet.
Yeah.
Actually, I do have head covers that are copies of my mask.
We noticed that while we were watching the film the other night. We kind of laughed about that.
They're,
that
was pretty awesome. They're briefly displayed at the end of the film. Yeah, I pointed that out. I was like, wow, he's got his own mask and his cool head cover. That's like a life goal for me, for sure.
And Grant, speaking of goalier, there's been talk in the NHL now about, you know, making it smaller to increase goal scoring, but I imagine it was probably pretty small when you played. What are your thoughts on, I remember Patrick Waugh wearing the huge inflated stuff in the 90s, but what do you feel about this movement to get him, to make him smaller now?
Well, we had to wear it smaller because it was heavy. Mm-hmm. I think that's why guys are wearing it bigger now, is they've taken all the weight out of it. If they want to change the goalie gear, all you do is put some weight back in it. Guys will shrink it themselves. I mean, nobody wants to lug around 30 or 35 pounds, so it'll automatically shrink on its own.
Yeah, I remember it would get heavier as the game would go on too, once it got wet. The leather and the materials inside would soak it up.
It was good the first day of training camp. After that, it just kept gaining weight.
I always thought that was me, but I guess it was the equipment. Okay, so that was Goalie Gear Corner, and thank you very, very much. We wanted to point out to our listeners, by the way, get out to Seattle International Film Festival this weekend. So Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr story, will be playing three different times. It's on June 1st, which is Saturday, at Shoreline Community College at 6 p.m. It's then playing on June 2nd at 6:30 p.m. at SIFF Cinema Uptown. A couple of us will be there for that. And then it will play again the following Sunday, June 9th, at SIFF Cinema Uptown. That one's at 12:30, so a matinee. So plenty of options to get out and see it. It's an awesome film. Grant Fuhr, thank you so, so much for taking time to join Sound of Hockey. We really, really appreciate having you on.
That's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so that was pretty cool to talk to Grant Fuhr, huh?
Yeah, pretty amazing. Seems like a pretty nice guy. The movie was interesting. Some things we didn't have time to talk to him about, but he played a lot of games. There was a couple seasons. There was one year where he played 79 games.
79 games out of regular 82. Season. Yeah.
That just blows my mind when you think about today, when the trend is to have a tandem, and they didn't really have that.
And the interview is very similar to the movie where he's so chill.
Yeah.
Too,
yeah.
Right?
Like, whatever. Very, very even keeled. And like, that's kind of what probably made him a great goalie too. Yeah. Like he never gets super high or low. Yep. So yeah, really, really cool to talk to him. He's such a legend. I remember watching him play as a little kid. So very, very cool.
And
so,
he's into his goalie gear.
Oh yes.
He was into that conversation with you about the goalie gear. Absolutely.
Let's move into our own segments aside from Goalie Gear Corner, which we already covered with Grant Fuhr. That was fun. Hall of Famer Grant Fuhr. our first is You Don't See That Every Day. So the Halifax Mooseheads in the Memorial Cup. It's kind of another cup date. they celebrated losing a game. Why did this happen, Andy?
So they lost their last round robin game against Rouyn Noranda. But because of the tiebreaker rules and the goal differential, by losing by one goal like they did, that automatically sent them to the final. So they didn't have to play in the semifinal game, which Guelph and the Huskies did. So you don't see often a team celebrating on the ice. They were all hugging each other. Their sticks were in the air. The crowd was their home for their home crowd. Mm-hmm. The crowd was all cheering, and they lost.
That's interesting.
It's almost something like a soccer match.
Yeah, it's something you.
Yeah, when they have a tie and right, yeah, exactly. Put on an aggregate. Yeah, they go through.
Everyone's excited. Or yeah, you lose the because of the aggregate. Yeah. That's bizarre. But you win.
Yeah. Well, so in hockey, you don't see that every day. So, what was the other one? I know you had a second. You don't see that every day.
Yeah. San Diego. Again, another kind of a cup date in the Calder Cup playoffs. San Diego and Chicago. I think this was game four down in San Diego. Delayed penalty being called on Chicago. And the goals pull their goalie. They're working the puck around. Guy gets it at center ice, flings it back to what he thinks is a defenseman standing there, goes in between the two defensemen and right into the net.
Yeah, so the funny thing, I've always thought about
this. The play-by-play is great because the Chicago guy starts screaming, it's going in the net!
Yeah, so I mean, they score on themselves. It's a legal goal, right? Yep. I mean, the last team to touch it was the defending team.
The goalie got credit for the goal?
Yes, so there you go. So there's the other part is that the goaltender for Chicago was actually the last one on his team to touch it, so he got credit for the goal,
yep.
Which is amazing. Also, something to note on this, it wasn't...
So that was goalie goal corner right there a little bit.
It wasn't that it was like that bad of a pass, but there happened to be a stick lying, like an errant stick lying at the red line. And the guy went to pass it back to his D-man and it hit off of that stick and like made a sharp turn and found its way into the net. So.
And when the puck goes in, you see that the two D-men who are back, like they're just bent over.
Yeah,
they're like, are you kidding me?
Like, and this is in a huge...
And I believe it made it 3-1. I think it was 2-1.
Yeah, it was
Chicago was
game,
up and
yeah.
It made it 3-1.
And they were going to go on a power play, right?
Yep,
obviously.
Yep. And Chicago ended up winning that game. And then, as we talked about,
and it happened in the NHL like 5 years ago or something.
Yeah, I remember. Same kind of
situation. But never in a playoff game. Yeah. I've never seen it happen
or,
in a playoff game.
Conference final.
I've seen it before, but I certainly haven't seen it every day. So let's move on to our weekly one-timers. Whoopsh. Our first weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. Features a little bit of hashtag minutia.
This one's got a sting for you.
It does a little bit. It's a weird one. It's a little bit of a weird one. So there was a pretty heavily confirmed rumor that came out in The Athletic from it was both Minnesota and Pittsburgh writers confirmed it. So Michael Russo and I forget who the guy is from Pittsburgh. Yohei, I think is his last name. But they both had kind of separate stories that both confirmed the same thing, which was that the Wild and the Penguins had a trade on the table and like ready to send through, which was going to send Jason Zucker and Victor Rask from Minnesota to Pittsburgh. Victor Rask is kind of a problematic contract for them. He was who they traded Niederreiter for, and he was just a complete bust. And then coming back the other way, it was going to be Phil Kessel. And
he played college in Minnesota, correct?
Right, yep. He's from Madison, Wisconsin, but he played for the Minnesota Gophers.
He's kind of the opposite of Darren.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, there's reciprocity. So you play in-state tuition, Minnesota and you go to Wisconsin and vice versa. So I'm sure that's what happened to Phil. I'm sure he wasn't on a full-ride scholarship. But then the other player that was going to come back was Jack Johnson. So the idea was that, you know, both teams were going to take kind of a problematic contract to go with a significant player. The issue was Phil Kessel has a modified no trade clause where he can say yes or no to certain teams. Strangely, even though he played his college hockey at Minnesota, he vetoed the trade. So the word on the street is that he just wasn't, and by on the street, I mean as reported in The Athletic, is that he's not particularly thrilled with the makeup of the Minnesota Wild. So that's,
and didn't feel they were in contention.
Yes, that's got to burn for somebody like me who spends so much time.
That's not something that the team could put on like season ticket marketing campaigns.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. Fortunately, they did also hire Mike Modano as an executive advisor, whatever that means. So there you go. Okay, that's enough hashtag minutia. Our next weekly one-timer We were picking on the Senators because they brought in Patrick Waugh for an interview, and we said it would be really fun to see him, you know, actually behind the bench of the dumpster fire that is the Ottawa Senators.
Would have been great.
Yep. But instead, who did they hire?
DJ Smith.
And who is that?
He was an assistant with the Toronto Maple Leafs this last year.
Okay. What do we know anything else about him?
He was assistant with the Toronto Maple Leafs last year.
Cool. John's like, no, there's more. We can do more.
I believe this is his first head coaching gig.
Yes.
I don't have John. I don't have
Oh, you don't have more. I thought you were saying that you had more. Okay. No, so I didn't. That's about what we know. We do know, like, they spoke very highly of him and they're very excited to have him and all that. So you wonder though.
That's good.
Yeah. It's funny though, like
it would be great if they're like, yeah, we hired this guy. We kind of think he sucks.
We couldn't find anybody else.
Which might be kind of true, that last part.
We were talking though that like they can't go with somebody that people haven't heard of because they really need to kind of make a quote unquote splash here to try to win fans back. And of course they go with the guy that nobody's ever heard of. So maybe that's different in Eastern Canada, right? Where maybe they know of an assistant coach a little bit.
Especially
better.
Especially with Toronto, because that's kind of a big, it's kind of a high market.
Just down the road, right? But yeah. I don't know. At least me, I follow hockey very closely and I'm not super familiar with
it. It wasn't
with
one that moved the needle that much
no.
across the hockey world. I think
not like Patrick Waugh would have.
No, Patrick Waugh would have. That would have sold some tickets.
The needle would have gone like all the way over yes. and the, you know, like
to when the
you
see danger the, zone.
Yeah, when, like, the, yeah, when the gauge like breaks. Cause yep. it's so, yeah. Our next weekly one timer. Brock Nelson of the New York Islanders, he was rumored to be one of the big free agent fish this offseason. That's not going to be the case anymore. Why, John?
Well, he re-signed with the New York Islanders.
Okay, so that makes it impossible for him to go to free agency?
That's true.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm learning so much today.
6 years for $6 million a year.
Not bad.
That's a good payday for
that
him.
Is, yeah. That is really good. A lot of people think he was overpaid, but yep. I think a lot of people have a lot of opinions.
Well, Evolving Wild, to make it a little bit more analytical, the Evolving Wild twins do this thing with
they project
salaries. They have a chart that projects the salaries. It's usually pretty accurate. And they had him more, I think it was more like 4 years at $4 million. So it was, yeah.
That's quite a bit.
That's a big difference, yeah. Right? So
a couple things. Though to keep an eye on these free agents, and we'll probably get into that kind of leading up to the free agent season.
Makes sense.
Is we look for no move clauses in 2020, 2021, I think it would be 2022.
This is the beautiful mind thing here.
We're trying to because, do math. Because yeah. no move clauses, that club would have to protect that player.
Okay.
No trade clauses are okay.
Okay.
You don't have to protect somebody even if they have a full no trade clause.
You're talking expansion draft right now.
That's right.
Okay.
John's focus is all on who the crap we just are going to get in the expansion draft.
No, but it's honestly something I look for every single time.
So he got a no trade clause on this? He's got
a no trade clause.
But not a no move clause.
Okay.
So he could be exposed.
He could be exposed. So they have to protect him theoretically if they want to keep him safe in the expansion draft.
That's correct.
Got it.
And they're not required to protect him.
Got it. Something to think about, though, as a Seattle fan. Thank you for that.
We'll
I appreciate
see how
it.
The next couple seasons go.
Yep. All right. Moving on to our next weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. Gary Bettman spoke about video replay. What did he say?
Well, he said, as we speculated on this very podcast, I believe last week or a week before, that he sees that there's going to be some sort of video expansion as a result of all the snafus we've seen this year.
No, but the one – so let's put some color around it, right? Mm-hmm. He's very resistant to adding a lot more.
Yes, he doesn't want the flow of the game to be interrupted.
He's concerned – he even said he's concerned about slowing the game down with too much – because a lot of people are going to be like, Gary Bettman, of course, he's going to ruin the game. More video review. He's not eager about it, but it's something that he's – trying to do very thoughtfully.
But it's also not just solely his cause.
Right.
The call. The GMs, the GMs are the ones who ultimately are going to decide what
happens. Not at all. But he usually takes the brunt of any criticism the league does.
That's his position.
Of course. It's better him than the owners.
The most disappointing thing to me is he said that there's no going back and having less reviews, which means we're going to be stuck still with the offside thing that nobody really likes.
Which is ironic because they did go back on the offside thing and limit how the challenges happen.
Yes, they did. So. But it's still there.
Right. Our next weekly one-timer, Corey Pronman, who covers prospects for The Athletic, for NHL prospects. He does a ton of work on that. He came out with his rankings of goalies. A couple of interesting names popped up in the top five, familiar names. John?
Yeah, the big one locally is Dustin Wolf of the Everett Silvertips. Now,
John always brings it back to the WHL.
Yep, and I always bring it back to goalies, so let's kick it over to John.
He's
I just wanted, for the record, I did not mention Dustin Wolf. Yeah.
He's ranked number 5 on the list, and that's by far the highest I've seen him all season. I think he's
ranked, 5 of goaltenders, not 5.
That's right. Overall. He's ranked number 16, I believe, on the North American goalies based on NHL Central Scouting.
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't include the goalies that are playing in Europe, right? Okay. So you combine the two lists, and then essentially that's where your lists come from as far as the top-ranked goalies worldwide. So number 5 is pretty significant change. And Pronman, he's got a good track record. He's really good at what he does. So, and I like it's such a bold call, like putting him that mm-hmm. low compared to what Central Scouting has. Now, the other name on there is Spencer Knight. Spencer Knight, USA hockey
friend
goalie.
Friend of the blog.
Friend of the blog.
Friend of the blog. So what's really cool, though, is when I read the article, Darren, you wrote a Spencer Knight profile article in December when they were up here for the development camp. And then Andy, last summer, leading up to the WHL season, you wrote a really cool profile on Dustin Wolf. And I thought that's pretty awesome that it's almost like we know
what
we're talking about.
Yeah.
Huh. So anyway, I thought it was really cool, and I'm like psyched for you guys because that's pretty neat.
Like a proud father.
I'm fascinated to see where Dustin Wolf goes, because I know, right or wrong, there is this misnomer about goaltenders who are under 6 feet tall, which he is. You look at his performance and his numbers, and he should be up there at number 5 or even higher.
Mm-hmm.
But there are teams that just automatically will dismiss him. Not every team, but there are some that will just say, you know what, we only want goalies who are over 6 feet tall. I know that's the trend. I think that's kind of ridiculous. I mean, somebody's got to take a shot on a guy who's under that. I think he's going to get drafted. I'm curious to see where it is. Is it second round, third round, fourth round? Does he slip? It's going to be fascinating to watch.
What is really the difference between getting drafted super late, which could happen, right? It might be like a 6th, 7th round kind of a thing for him, versus just signing as a free agent after the draft? Is there any big difference there?
Well, if you sign as a free agent after the draft, you usually have more of a choice where you want to go.
Sure.
So you can pick and choose teams where you are in like the pecking order of the team's rankings and prospects and where they're going to slot you. If you're drafted, you get a little bit more, you have a little bit more prestige, and you're probably going to get a longer look. So you might get the benefit of the doubt more. If you have a down season, like in the AHL or something, they're going to give you a little more time than they might a free agent that they just signed. They didn't use a capital of a draft pick on. So I think that's kind of the difference. But there are millions of stories of guys who go undrafted and end up playing in the NHL at all positions.
I mean, yeah, and maybe start a Stanley Cup final game.
Yep.
Yeah, a guy like that. So it's never the end of the world. You know, there's a lot of, like, you know, I think of Brendan Dillon from the Sharks, who wasn't drafted in the NHL. Wasn't drafted in the WHL Bantam draft. He's played 500 NHL games now. Defenseman, still, but different. But yeah, you see it a lot.
I think goalies probably see more undrafted goalies percentage-wise than skaters.
Yeah. So if he doesn't get drafted, it's not the end of the line for him, is what we're saying.
No, but I think he will get drafted. But yeah, I think he's got a pro hockey career. It's just who's going to take that chance on the chance, quote unquote chance on the small goalie.
Who also is unbelievably good.
Yeah.
Well, we said exactly the same thing.
I mean, if you watch him play, he's in position. He doesn't get out of position. I mean, he's just a so student calm. Of the game. Yeah, he's really very good. Calm. He's just one of those gurus. The other thing about Pronman, we talked about the number one pick overall last week. Pronman did have Jack Hughes still at number one.
Over
Kepo Kekko. Former Thunderbird Dylan Hamilek showed up on his list at number 44 or something like that.
Cool. Yeah.
Now with the Kelowna Rockets, but he played up until now for Seattle.
Our final weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. John, I know you love TV ratings and pulling data. What have you found about this year's NHL playoffs?
Oh, I love ratings. Uh-huh. So the ratings are actually down from last year, but they're up from 4% from the year before. Now, last year they had Philadelphia and LA in the playoffs, so that kind of inflates ratings a bit. But an average of 1.1 million viewers have tuned in per game. It's the 5th most since 1994. The second round was the most viewed ever.
Interesting.
With 1.6 million viewers across all platforms. Yeah.
Wow.
Just the second round. And I don't know, that might have been all the hype from the first round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with all
the upsets.
The
first round was so crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and they're missing a couple of the big markets this year. And, you know, the Rangers weren't in and the Islanders were in for a couple of rounds. Mm-hmm. But, you know, no Philly, no LA.
And last year, obviously, the dip, you know, from last year to this year, I think you can explain that with the Washington Capitals story of Ovechkin and Vegas. Which is
are these just U.S. TV ratings, or is this both U.S. and Canada?
Yes, just U.S.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I ask is I saw an interesting theory. I think James Myrtle tweeted it out that the Toronto Raptors have made the NBA Finals for the first time in their history. And he said that he thought the Stanley Cup Final ratings in Canada might take a dip because the Raptors are Canada's team.
Interesting.
That's interesting because
that's actually a good point.
Yeah. It's not.
Oh, okay.
It's not.
James Bertle.
No,
take that.
It's not. He stirs the pot all the time, and he doesn't. He throws these out, and I know it's not
data.
They
still
don't
#data.
They take a hit
in Toronto
when there's no Canadian team, right? But I don't even know the NBA final if they're even going head to head. Usually they don't.
No, I don't think they would.
Yeah,
I think the goal.
That's a good point. I think fans are able to watch one game one night and another game the other night.
Yeah.
All right, that wraps up this week's weekly one timers. We'll close out the show with our tweets of the week. Andy, what's your tweet of the week?
Mine comes from Matt Porter, tweeted out. He is a Bruins beat writer for the Boston Globe. And he has a quote here from John Moore, who plays for Boston. And it's on the Bruins chemistry. And the quote is, quote, "For lack of a better way to put it, there's no dickheads," end quote.
Interesting.
Now, I think a lot of people might disagree with that statement from the outside looking in. But I understand what he's saying, that they're all cool with each other.
Okay. They like each other.
Yes. I would say they have quite a few dickheads if you're looking at it from somewhere else.
At least one that I can think of. My tweet of the week was from Pete Blackburn, have I done a tweet of the week from him
probably
before?
He always makes me laugh.
Yeah. He's a real good tweeter. On media day before the NHL final, they always do like a new round of photos of all the players. So they they took the picture of Jay Bouwmeester, who's obviously a defenseman for the Blues, and somehow, like in this photo, he's kind of got hair that's not like all that well done. He's wearing just a black polo with like glasses that don't look like they're that current, and he's he's just like holding his hockey stick. And the tweet says, "Jay Bouwmeester looks like an insufferable tech bro who won a silent auction to participate in a weekend fantasy camp."
Which is spot on.
Spot on.
He almost looks like Bill Gates there a little bit.
Yeah. Pete also is a big Boston Bruins fan. So like he's always got very obviously biased tweets, and he knows it. But
he's a good follow, though.
Yeah, very good follow. And I just thought those were really funny ones. So that's mine. John, what do you have? Do you have one?
I do have
one.
He
has one.
Yeah, I know.
We had to kind of prompt him a little bit.
Yeah, I know. Uh-huh. 5 days ago, there was a hashtag that was trending. It was "if social media didn't exist."
Mm-hmm.
And so people were kind of
what would our lives be like without social media?
So our old friend Gritty.
Oh, we haven't heard from him in a while.
Well, the flyers have been out for a while.
Tweeted with the hashtag "if social media didn't exist, no one would ever know," with a gif of him in his debut. Going out on the ice and slipping like he slipped on a banana
with the
t-shirt gun. So pretty awesome for Gritty. Still staying relevant.
I believe if you go back into the Sound of Hockey archives, we talked about that very fall on the first episode. We talked about Gritty.
If social media didn't exist, we wouldn't have been able
to.
That was way back when I was an early adopter of Gritty.
That's right.
And shouting
the heel turn.
Uh-huh,
exactly. I'm still all Gritty.
All right. You would be. This wraps up episode 38 of Sound of Hockey. Thank you again to Grant Fuhr for joining us. How cool
Amazing.
Is that? We had Hockey Hall of Famer, Vezina winner.
He's
Grant
our first
Fuhr.
Hall of Famer, is he not?
Well, questionably, because Christian is he was in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame,
but not the
Hockey Hall of Fame that's in Toronto. So Grant Fuhr is in the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto, and it was super fun.
And someday the archives of this podcast will be in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
I'm sure it will, if it's not already. Have you guys gotten a call from them?
No.
Okay, soon. I'm sure soon. Thank you all for listening. Please do subscribe on iTunes. Go out and see Grant Fuhr's movie at SIFF.
Watch party.
Come to the watch.
Oh, we need a video camera in here.
I'm like,
see John pantomiming things.
John's trying to set me up with like reminding me what to say here in the closeout, and he's like,
I understand
shoveling fake tater tots into his face.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
But make sure to leave your review on iTunes, subscribe on Stitcher, and all that good stuff. And we will talk to you all next week for episode 39. Thank you all.